and fishing, highs into the upper 60s to lower 70s. I'm meteorologist Bill Murray on Tide 100.9.
It's 61 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
And not down again. That was Christian Miller.
It's time for the Miller's Edge with four-time SEC champion and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here's college football playoff national champion Christian Miller on Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
And welcome into this Victory Monday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Art Sport Experts. I would say I hope you guys are doing well, but I'd imagine you're doing pretty good, at least in terms of the sports world. If you're an Alabama fan, you got to be doing really good. Talk about a comeback to life, comeback win for Alabama, being down 17-0 Reed early on in the game. But then the resurgence, right? I mean, guys not wavering, guys not whimpering. Many men comes on, 50 Cent comes on, and I think it worked more in our favor than theirs. We're going to talk about this game, Reed. 34-24 victory over the Oklahoma Sooners in their backyard in Norman, Alabama. Finally gets the job done against Brent Venables and the Sooners, man. Third time is the charm, I guess. Didn't look like that was going to be the case early on in this football game. That's why they always say it's a 60-minute ball game. Speaking of that, there's probably a lot of people that were going back and deleting tweets and going back and trying to correct themselves. I'll just say this. You know, again, I did the post-game show on the network. I always jot down my notes throughout the game. The first part of my notes, I'll be completely honest, Reed, there was a lot of criticism. Well, yes, it can be called criticism, but a lot of negatives to break down. Because let's be honest, that first quarter might have been one of the worst ones we've seen, especially in a matchup like that. And it was not looking pretty. But sure enough, man, these guys kept fighting. Had a couple of things go our way, which has to happen in these big matchups, especially if you want to make a comeback. And most importantly, Reed, we made some playoff caliber football plays in this game. We'll talk about those plays. Hell, we'll even give them a look. We'll pull up some tape. We'll watch it. We're going to break it down. And I'm going to give you guys my whole breakdown, my whole thought process on this matchup, as we always do on a Victory Monday. But then I want to hear from you guys. 205-342-9904. That is the number to the program. Love to get you guys on the phone lines, get y'all's opinions on this matchup. And then later on in the show, maybe we'll do an early preview on what's next for Alabama after defeating Oklahoma. First team to win a playoff road game after defeating the Sooners Friday evening. What's next? Well, Indiana, the number one seed in the playoff bracket, is next on the schedule. In California, in the Rose Bowl. So that's going to be fun. We'll do an early little preview there, but we'll definitely focus a lot on this matchup and what the hell happened, right? I mean, how do we get down 17-0? How do we come back from that? And how do we just completely look like a completely different team outside of that first quarter? We'll dive into the specifics of everything like we like to do with our breakdowns and all that good stuff. All we do is ask if you guys are joining us on the stream. Hey, just hit that like button, subscribe, all that good stuff. You're listening via Tide 100.9 FM or the app. Welcome in. You guys can sit back and, hell, if you got some questions, just drop us an at message, and we'll definitely try to respond to that as well. Got to remind you about our friends over at the Good Feet Store, America's Art Support Experts. Try before you buy, nothing to lose. Make sure you guys go check them out if you haven't already. If you're dealing with any foot pain, knee pain, back pain, hip pain, you name it, they will take care of it right there at the Good Feet Store. These people are awesome. Customer service is about as good as it gets, and plus the products are phenomenal. Again, they are clinically proven to eliminate and alleviate all types of pain in just 4 short weeks, so make sure you guys step on by the Good Feet Store, especially if you're like me, you're on your feet all day. You don't have to be a former athlete. Everybody deals with aches and pains, especially to start getting up there in age. So make sure you guys take advantage of that. Again, you can go to their website, get more information, find the nearest location to you. That is the Good Feet Store, improving the quality of people's lives 2 feet at a time. Let's do this. Since we got plenty to talk about and already laid the table, that's going to be pretty much what this show consists of, the Alabama-Oklahoma breakdown, a little preview later on in the show. Let's hit our first time out. That way we can stay on schedule when we come back. We jump into this breakdown. We talk about what transpired in this matchup, how Alabama came back from that 17-point deficit. And again, later on, we'll talk about what's next. All right here on the Miller's Edge title.
There was in the days of Herod. Yes, the Christmas story is more than fantasy. True belief is the secret to a lifetime of Merry Christmases. From Taco Casa.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Friday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Presented by the Good Feet Store, America's arch support experts. Getting ready to dive into this breakdown. As I mentioned, we have the defensive copy of the tape, but don't have the offensive copy just yet. So we'll probably start there when we do get into breaking some tape down, and then we'll try to move forward from that. But I know everybody wants to see the offensive side of things because there's a lot of big things happening offensively. Not to say defense. Defense did their things. You know, listen, first quarter was not great, but outside of that, definitely made some adjustments. We'll talk about those and hopefully be able to show you guys here in a minute. But as you guys know, try to break it down first for our radio listeners, for everybody. Then we'll pull up the tape here and dive into it here in just a second. Reed, who's behind the glass. Reed, you mentioned, you said you watched the game. You said you had faith. Your dad was a little nervous, man. At what moment did you feel like how did it go for you? Because this is how it went for me. We go down 17-0. And I said, one of my keys for this game is just, I think we need to start fast. I think that would help us out tremendously, especially knowing that Oklahoma, they're not a team that wants to be playing from behind, which we found that out. They found that out, or they knew that, spelled trouble for them in the second half once Alabama did, in fact, take the lead. That said, for me, when we were able to come back from that 17-0 deficit and go into halftime tied up, I felt extremely confident about this game. I'm sure you guys also did, but to me, that signified, hey, it's a 0-0 game technically going into the half. We're about to get the football back. And I know things hadn't been looking great for us even in the first half, but to me, I had faith, hey, we could go make some adjustments and come out of the second half and play much better football than those guys can. And I just know what that can do to you mentally. If you give up a 17-point lead as a football team, and you know your offense isn't the most well-built offense to be able to, you know, have these long drives, go put up a bunch of points, you already knew what was going on. You talk about the whole aspect of those guys riding on all the motivation that they had, all the tactics, the 50 Cent concert in the third quarter, the drone show pregame, all that stuff. It only lasts so long. And then when you give up a 17-point deficit like that, or 17-point lead, that can definitely mess with you mentally for a football team. But Reed, when was it that you really felt confident that Alabama was going to be able to pull this off?
So, Christian, I kind of say it was two parts. You know, of course, when we scored on the 4th-and-2, Brooks making his way. I know Pat called earlier and called it the Superman, which I found pretty funny because he kind of like dived into the end zone like Superman there. So I was like, okay, hey, we're not done yet, you know. But I think the missed pass, the missed deep pass on third down, which then forced them to punt. And then I don't know if it was on that same punt or a later punt, and then the punter dropping, or I'm not exactly sure what happened there, because it looked like he was good to punt it off, and then it feels like when he did his drop, he like miscalculated or something, and we got it, like we got good field position, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, this game might be kind of turning around here. So I think it was right then, you know, in these kind of games, in the playoff games, you got to win on the special team side of the ball.
You do, and ironically, that's where we won, which let's dive into it. This really felt like an inverse almost of the last matchup these teams had. You know, Oklahoma outgained us, right? In total yards, they outgained us. I want to say it was, I had the box score pulled up here, but they outgained us in this football game. John Mateer threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns as well he had. I mean, I'm sure if you asked Oklahoma's coaching staff if they had those numbers, they would feel so damn confident that they would be able to pull this game off. But we know what can happen when you play good football and you're able to do some good things. Turnovers and costly mistakes, they ultimately can end up being the deciding factor. And look, that's pretty much what happened in this football game. You know, after a very good start for Oklahoma, they jump up 17-0 on us. Listen, the first quarter, we had like 12 total yards. I don't think we had a single first down. Their defense was aggressive. They were bringing it. And I'm not going to lie, in my head at that point, Reed, I just was thinking like, man, this feels like it's going to be one of those days where, unfortunately, our offense, you guys heard me. I said, I'm really going to be disappointed if our offense doesn't, you know, come back to life even a little bit after having some time off, some time to prep. And initially, man, that's kind of what it looked like. I mean, we were struggling with picking up the pressures, which we said that was going to be a huge key in this game. And defensively, I'm just going to be honest, man, the first quarter, we did not tackle well. We looked a little soft. We were giving up way too much in the passing game. We were playing a lot of zone defense. They're picking us apart. Just like, remember last week when Jake asked me that question, that's why I said I'm not a huge fan of just sitting back in soft zone, man. You can get picked apart like that, and teams can just move the football down the field. And that's pretty much what we were seeing. We weren't getting any pass rush early on. I mean, we started this first game, this first quarter, probably about as bad as we could have imagined. And I want to say there's another game that was similar where I feel like we just had a really bad first quarter. I can't remember which one, but it really felt like that. That said, you got to tip your hat to Oklahoma. I mean, they did about all the things that they want to do outside of those costly mistakes, which came early in the game with he called a block punt, but the guy really dropped the ball. It's kind of crazy. I've never seen a punter just drop the football like that. But he drops the football, ends up being a block punt. Shout out to Tim Keenan recovering on it. We get the ball there, leads the points. And then, like you mentioned, the 4th-and-2 effort by Lotzier Brooks. Man, talk about a dog. I mean, that second effort by him to find his way in the end zone. Honestly, that to me was the turning point in this football game. And I'll explain why, but that was at that point. That was our first – those were our first points, right? That was the first touchdown when we scored. And I'll dive into a little bit deeper later, but there was confusion, right? We motioned to empty, and there's teams always – defense always – you have, like, empty checks. And five, the guy we talked really highly of, right, 6'5", 240, I mean, really good football player. He's sitting there confused, right? He's asking, like, what do I have? He didn't know what his responsibility was. He ends up, like, starting to rush on the play. Obviously ended up being a bust. I was shocked that Venables did not call a timeout right there. And I know you don't want to necessarily give Alabama more time to go draw up something else or get in, you know what I mean? Like, they're even, I guess, give them time, right, for them. But to me, if you got a guy sitting there acknowledging, hey, I don't know what the hell's going on. This is like a critical fourth down play right here in the low red. I was surprised he didn't call a timeout and ended up being a touchdown. And I think that kind of got the wheels turning. Then you talk about that pick six by Xavier Brown, very reminiscent of the Tennessee pick six, man. And we'll talk about what we did there to cause that. Again, I'm all for saying, hey, you know, we made a mistake, they made a mistake, but you got to give credit when it's due. And we forced that issue. It wasn't just John Mateer just throwing a bad ball. Definitely was a bad decision, but that decision was forced by some things that we did. But again, the resurgence after that first quarter, man, was really impressive. We had to rely on some gifts, so to speak, from those guys. But again, that's what you have to have in these games. You got to capitalize it on it. And unfortunately, we didn't capitalize on some of those gifts in the first game. This time around was much better. Talked about that block punt and the pick six, along with that fourth down conversion. Those are the biggest plays, you know, leading to that comeback and then going into halftime, making some adjustments and coming back out. Just still swinging, man, not giving up. You know, it's like a, you know, heavyweight fight. In those, in any boxing match, right? One guy's getting, you know, beat up the first couple rounds. He's kind of feeling it out. It looks like he damn near is almost knocked out early in the round. And next thing you know, he just comes back to life, man, ends up winning it because he sustained. And that's what we did, man. We sustained all the shots that they gave us. So this is was crazy. We end up going on a 27-0 run. 27-0 to run, left these guys scrambling. And, you know, they don't like playing from behind. That's not what they do. All that momentum that they had offensively started to die down. And the adjustments that we made defensively were really solid in this game. I'll dive into that here in a second. But want to give a shout-out also while we're talking about everything in this matchup. Special teams, Connor Talti, the guy that has struggled, you know, later, I guess this whole year. But we know he had a moment where he was booed at one point. And talk about his play since then. He's been so much better. And in this game, he ended up outperforming the Lou Garza Award winner for Oklahoma. And that was one of their elite things. That guy ended up missing two field goals, win, you know, a little bit of a factor, but still, no excuses there. Connor Talti found a way, right? He also had the win, and he was able to drill his. So shout out to him for being able to stay resilient, you know, keep his head down, keep working, and showing up big when we need it. But this is how I look at it, just to break it down real quick from defense and offense. Defense, tough start, missed tackles, giving up way too much. We make some adjustments. We start being more aggressive, calling more pressures, play a lot more man coverage, ends up paying dividends. We end up going from no pass rush to getting, I think, 5 sacks total on the day. Shout out to guys like Yonze Pierre making plays up front. Keon Keeley continues to find himself in big plays when we need it, man. He's stepping up, so it's always cool to see that. And I just thought overall, man, just defense played much better outside of that first quarter. I thought linebacker play was much better, very solid. Deontay Lawson and really all the backers had good games. Justin Jefferson looked solid as well. Nikaiho Green, he had one play, man. He just showed his range, just, you know, completely seeking out. I think it was maybe like a sweep or something that they ran, but all linebackers, I thought, played well. And then, yeah, we talked about the big pick by Xavier Brown and some big plays by those guys as well. So I thought overall defense outside of the first quarter played some damn good football. Yes, we gave up, you know, a number of things, a couple of explosives early on wasn't great, but hey, man, we made those adjustments and it made a world's difference. Then offense, right? Bad start, 12 yards thing in the first quarter. I mean, it was not looking pretty. Didn't really consistently run the football, but the most important thing was we were able to run it at the end when it mattered the most. And listen, you know, Daniel Hill to me just looked a lot more fresh in this game. I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of Jam just because I figured that he still was a little bit banged up. But Quavis being back, I thought, made a big difference in this football game. And shout out to the wide receivers, man. I mean, we talked about this on the show. We needed some guys to step up, right? Like, somebody had to step up and help out. I know Ty hasn't been on, you know, on his A game, but still, you got to have players that make plays. And I talked about this going back last week. When you watch these highlights, it's not always a quarterback making perfect throws. Sometimes the receivers have to step up and help make these plays right for him, because that's number one, you know, their job. But two, it's going to help build his confidence, and that's what we saw. I think it started with Lotsier Brooks. I think the return of Quavis definitely helped out, just having him back, just knowing he's that security blanket for Ty. You know, he had three receptions for 35 yards, a long of 23. I mean, again, and he's fighting through it, man. But these guys, man, they're tough, man. A lot of them banged up, but they still are fighting through it. But I thought Brooks was great. I mean, he definitely was a big piece of the 27 unanswered points. After being down 17. And I thought, you know, we did a number of different things to help kind of, I guess, you know, give some different looks. We talked about some tempo, right? Not necessarily just like tempo, like no huddle type deal, but we saw like some muddle huddles and a quick getting to the ball, running a play. I thought those little change-ups helped out a little bit. And so overall, man, I thought this was probably one of our better games outside of that first quarter, just in terms of really just, I just was impressed with the resiliency, man. Being able to get hit in the mouth like that early on the road. Like, I don't think people understand that. That's tough to maintain a mindset of, hey, man, we're down 17-0 on the road in a playoff game. It's now or never. Excuse me, never. We haven't been playing great last few weeks. Definitely looks like we're continuing down that trend. But for them to keep their heads down and keep on pushing, man, that was definitely very impressive. And then we had a number of plays that you have to have. If you want to listen, at this point in the year, you have to have guys step up and make those plays. You know, the play, like the, you know, the deep shots that we finally hit on, right? Me and Smitty were talking about that, being able to hit some of those 50-50 balls. You got to have those opportunities. Jeremy Bernard, the catch over the back, looked like something from, you know, Tyron Prothrow. I mean, those types of plays is what we've been lacking. And to see those return, man, listen, if you want to win in the playoffs, you got to have guys step up like that. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like that, you have to have big time players making those plays in these moments. So that's really what it boiled down to. It was almost an inverse of what we saw in the first matchup. Oklahoma played a solid game. Again, shout out to Mateer. You know, give him props, right? I mean, 26 of 41, over 300 yards, two touchdowns, had a really bad pick that definitely was a turning point in this game. But I mean, he played about as good as they probably expected him to. Probably played better than they even anticipated. But still, man, some of those costly turnovers, then that willpower from Alabama, not giving up at all, right? Finding a way, right? Even on the running game, wasn't really consistent. Didn't run the ball a whole bunch, but got some big plays out of it when we needed. And I'll talk about some of the differences out of those explosives versus, you know, why we might not have them, had those in the past. So that was it, man. Alabama with a huge comeback, I think one of the biggest ones in college football playoff history. And they continue, they advance, they go on, where they'll face Indiana in the Rose Bowl here on New Year's Day. It's going to be exciting, and I know a lot of people are looking forward to it. And there's hopefully a lot of people that are finally going to put down the whole talk about our coach, maybe, you know, testing the water outside somewhere else. I don't think that's – I mean, I never thought that was going to happen. I definitely think that you could probably shut the door on that one now, but who knows? Somebody's probably still going to come up with something next week or something. Who knows? So it's always going to be something. But that said, that's kind of my initial breakdown. I got plenty more to talk about it, but I'd rather pull up the tape, which we got here. We'll do that. We'll pull up some stuff. I'll take y'all's questions. We'll take y'all's calls. 205-342-9904, breaking down this Alabama-Oklahoma matchup. We come back. We'll keep on rolling right here on the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230. WTBC.
And performing better. All you have to do is stop by Game Day Men's Health at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa for a free consultation.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393-9149 for your free estimate today. That's 205-393-9149. Asphalt Restoration, where smooth roads start. Roll Tide.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Into this Victory Monday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230. WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Art Sport Experts. Couple things. I knew I was forgetting some. We didn't mention Ty on here, and we need to, right? 18 of 29, 232 yards, two touchdowns, man. Got to tip your hat to that guy. Again, rough start, right? You could definitely sense that initially he wasn't comfortable. He was feeling the pressure of OU, right? They're all in his face in the backfield. They came up with sacks. They were making it hard for him early on. But the resiliency that he displayed, and I think he rubs off on the team. I mean, you can just sense that in this matchup, I keep talking about, hey, we need to see that resurgence of that confidence, right, that swagger. And I thought we saw that, especially as the game progressed. I thought it was noticeable that things almost like slowed down for him. He started kind of, you know, trusting his guys a little bit more. Right. And we talk about, you know, some of those explosives, right? Those big plays. Again, was he perfect in this game? No, but it definitely was a step in the right direction. Just seeing him being able to capitalize on things. We talk about it. When you can make a defense pay for being so aggressive. I mean, these guys blitz probably 60% of the time. We talk about it. There should be some opportunities. You just got to take those shots. You got to keep them honest. And I feel like we hadn't really threatened anybody vertical in the last few weeks at all. And it was making things very tough because defenses were able to kind of just, you know, have their way with us. But this time around, man, we finally took those shots. I mean, there's that one to Horton. That was a beautiful ball by Ty on that one. Big play in the game. We talked about Jeremy Bernard's incredible catch that he had. Complete game-changing moment right there. Again, we haven't seen those plays in quite some time out of any of these guys. And I thought those, the fact that we had those come up, like, you know, come back to life in this game, I mean that, like, literally, if you want a chance to win big football games, you got to have those plays. It doesn't matter who it's coming from, whether it's Brooks, who also had another nice touchdown. He was a man on Bowens, man. Listen, Brooks is a special guy. And I know somebody brought up, I can't remember where I think somebody in the chat also mentioned too about, hey, man, we might need to start, you know, reallocating some of this NIL money. And while people are kind of joking about that, I mean, the reality is, yeah, that's actually a fact because you got to think about it, man. And I think it was Pete Golden talking about this. Everybody's looking to establish value, whether it's coaches, players. And when you go out there and have big performances, you play some good football, and especially in big moments, man, you're establishing value. And best believe there's going to be people that are seeing what he's doing, and they're going to – I mean, his value's up. So just know, and we heard from Courtney Morgan and that staff talk about that. Bill, you know, those guys – excuse me, Bob – talking about, you know, how they go about things with that. Best believe he's going to get taken care of. They're not going to let him walk. But that is an interesting conversation that we could talk about here in a minute. But, yeah, I just wanted to go back and at least give some credit to Ty, because just seeing him kind of, you know, take control, take command, slow things down, right, trust his guys, and make some big-time throws when we needed it, man. I thought it was huge for this offense and ultimately one of the biggest reasons why we were able to come back and make that effort to you know, for being down 17-0 and going on a 27-0 run against a good defense, which, let me say this too, because I've seen, you know, the narrative shift a little bit. Initially it was, which I still believe is the case, Oklahoma has one of the best defenses in the country. That is true. Now, can they be a little inconsistent here and there? Sure. Just like, hell, we were probably, you know, the best defense year in and year out, statistically, nationally, all that good stuff. However, we still had some inconsistent moments. And so I don't think it's fair now that you have some of these pundits kind of walking back some of these things. Like, well, they did it against the Oklahoma team. I think Danny Cannell said it. They did it against an Oklahoma team that was in his opinion, overrated. Now, to me, I'm like, nah. Listen, I've talked up Oklahoma's defense. I'm not going to be like these other people and I'll just try to say, oh, well, you know, their defense is a little inconsistent at times. But to be fair, we also made some really good football plays in this game, right? I mean, like, we contributed to that. It's not like they're just magically, oh, well, they're not that good. No. I'm not rocking with that. I don't know why people are trying to, you know, walk back some of that. No, Alabama's offense, who's been struggling the past month and some change, who struggled mightily in the first quarter, made some adjustments, did some things a little bit different, right? Our quarterback settled down. We took some shots. We hit on some shots. And look, we ended up making a comeback in that game, right? And that's all there is to it. I don't like how people are trying to change the narrative. Like, oh, well, Oklahoma's defense, they might have been a little overrated. No, they're a good unit. They're a really good defensive unit, no doubt about it. I just thought we stepped up to the challenge. And, I thought some of that extra motivation that they had early on, I thought it started to die down a little bit. And I thought once we got down to the nitty-gritty, because that's how football games work, man. It's a 60-minute game. I mean, especially when you're on the road, the home team. That's why I always talk about starting fast, trying to kill that crowd and that momentum as quick as possible, because then you really start finding out what teams are really made of. You can only ride that all that juice and all that extra stuff for so long. Once that goes out the window, I mean, you just got to strap up play by play and actually beat somebody. And we just saw that Alabama was a better football team all around, right? And just finally got back to doing the things that we know we're capable of doing. So,
Christian, you mind if I ask you something real quick?
Yeah, please do.
And maybe this is just me growing up as an Alabama fan, but why does it seem like, at least in my view, why is it that it's mostly Bama fans when we play a team like an Oklahoma defense that I still feel like is premier? They, like, before the game, they hype it up. But then once we, like, get the win and everyone else is like, well, yeah, they were overrated in general. Do you feel like that's just mainly us, or do you feel like that's other teams? Because at least just for me, I only see it when it happens to us.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I'll say this. I think it definitely does feel like it normally goes against us a good bit. So I don't think you're necessarily wrong there. I think they do it with a lot of people, but it does feel like Alabama's always going to be like front and center. So whether it just feels like that or not, I mean, they're always just going to be a lot of attention and talk about Alabama, whether it's good or bad. That said, this is how I would say, like, I will say this. Do I feel like I'm trying to figure out how to word this. I still think we have more meat on the bone. I still think we've got to play even better if we want to continue even deeper into the playoffs, right? Like, I wouldn't go as far as saying, like, as good as we looked outside of that first quarter against a good defense on the road, I still think there's some things that need to be even better that we've got to continue to clean up. But I don't think that merits saying, like, oh, well, going into the game, Oklahoma's defense was, you know, heavily talked about. And then all of a sudden now they're not. No. That's not true. Now, if someone wants to say, like for example, that same clip that Danny Cannell was talking about, he said he thinks Alabama's a little bit of fool's gold. I would not go nearly as far as saying fool's gold. It's not fool's gold. I mean, listen, Alabama has shown that they can play at that level. You know, yes, it's been streaky because we had that middle part of the season where we were playing like that. I mean, people forget, like, at one point, people viewed Ty as a top quarterback in the country, this offense is being one of the most effective and efficient offenses, even with a lack of running game. So to me, it's just we saw flashes of that returning. Like, we were hitting on some of those explosive plays earlier on in the year. You know what I mean? Like, think back to Missouri. Like, we had big plays. Ty, you know, making some incredible throws. Receivers making some incredible catches. I just think it was just we finally found that. We dug deep. Right? I mean, our backs were against the wall. Hell, we were down 17-0. We didn't have anything to lose. Win or go home. And these guys, I thought they just found a way. Now, I thought the coaches did some things to help out, right? Again, the little muddle huddle stuff, just kind of getting to the line of scrimmage, not letting Oklahoma adjust. I thought that was solid. And listen, again, I mean, I think one of the biggest difference really is just the execution. I mean, our guys stepped up and made big plays. And defensively, those adjustments from playing a lot of zone and going to man, which – to me, I'm like, listen, if you got the players, if you got the talent, you should play more man, right? Just strap it up. Just like I feel like if you have the talent up front, you don't have to blitz as much. You have the luxury of dropping more guys in coverage and having a little bit more security on the back end. Why? Because you have good players. Let them go win their one-on-ones. Let them win their reps. Just run some games. So it depends on what your team is built on. And I think personally, I mean, we've got the talent. I mean, I mean, Xavien Brown, and he definitely is fine playing man. I think Dejon Lee and Damani are solid as well in that aspect. And I think you just got to trust your guys and let them go out there and be football players sometimes. But you always mix it up, and we'll talk about that. I mean, I was watching the tape. Some of the things they were doing early on in the game, like with a lot of that zone, looked like cover six. Then to clarify, it was more of like an inverted cover two, but doing some things. And then like the call that we ran when with the pick six, I'll pull up that play here in a second, man. Really nice job by Kane Womack and then the disguise by our defense. They did a really good job. We were playing one thing a lot, and then we showed one look. And then post-snap, we get to something else, and it completely deceived John Mateer, which led to that pick six. So, I mean, that's how you play good defense, man. You got to make things tough for the opposing offense, because at the end of the day, I mean, you're reacting. They know what they're going to do. You're reacting, so you got to find advantages, right, the way that you can. And I think that's what we did. Let's do this. Let's hit a timeout and stay on schedule. I got the tape pulled up. We'll keep diving into it. I'm going to read the chat. That way we got questions. If you guys have any questions, go ahead and drop them in the chat. We'll start reading them and talking about them when we come back. Right here on the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.
It's quick, it's easy, and it's free. Go to mylocalcustomers.com today.
That's mylocalcustomers.com. Mylocalcustomers.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly cloudy this afternoon with just a slight chance of a light shower, mainly west. Temperatures near 60. Tonight stays cloudy and mild, lows near 50. Tomorrow turns warmer with some afternoon sunshine, pushing highs into the upper 60s to lower 70s. I'm meteorologist Bill Murray on Tide 100.9.
It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Into this Victory Monday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's art support experts. All right. I want to see, do we have any questions to hit? I know we got this tape pulled up, and we'll jump through here in a minute. Since you guys want specific stuff, just tell me what you guys want to look at or what you want us to break down, and we'll pull it up. And then just remind me also where in the game it happened, or like what, like, I guess, quarter. That way we can kind of jump around a little bit. Why don't we start with this question? Because I feel like this is a very interesting topic and a lot of people are talking about it. Number one, Ryan Williams, we talked about him a little bit, but it's evident, right? I mean, he's definitely, you know, he's struggling a little bit this season. I think he leads FBS in drops. We know the playmaker that he's capable of being, but we just haven't really seen that. And I think a lot of it just contributed to the drops. But, I mean, there's a number of things. I mean, he played a little bit of slot earlier on in the year, still, you know, moving around a little bit. He's been injured, so he's been out, coming back in. And then as of recent, he hadn't had as many targets, and then still kind of dealing with some drops. But it leads to the conversation that everybody's having right now, because you've got a true freshman, Latier Brooks, who's been stepping up tremendously. And he was the best receiver in this game. By far. I mean, he led the team with 5 receptions, 79 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, that first catch that he made, kind of bailing Ty out, his little underthrown, turning around, coming up big, then the 4th-and-2 conversion, the other touchdown that he had on Bowens. I mean, he's been stepping up big. Reed, I'm curious, man. There's a lot of talk right now. People are saying, hey, man, like, all the NIL money they're paying to Ryan, man, they need to break some off and pay Latier Brooks. What do you make of that whole conversation? Because I'll say this, number one, I'm not pocket watching. I'm not saying take money from a kid. I'm not saying that. But I also understand that we're about as close to being, I guess, the NFL as we've ever been. I mean, we're literally seeing reports and articles that come out that say so-and-so has agreed to a new deal. So-and-so is in talks for a new deal. And they're talking about college players. I just saw something like A&M had a wide receiver who is now the highest paid wide receiver. You know what I mean? So There is, that's true to the aspect of, hey, you have to manage these resources because with the new rules, I know we haven't talked about it in a while, but you've got revenue sharing, but then you still also have the whole NIL thing, which to me, this makes no sense. They come up with the whole NIL go thing that means you have to get these deals approved. I don't understand how a team like LSU is sitting there saying, oh, we're going to give Lane Kiffin up to $20 million or whatever in NIL resources. Like, I mean, how is that even getting cleared from the NIL go thing? To me, that makes no sense how we're still able to do that. That said, you do have to manage your resources and you have to be smart about allocating. It's literally just like being a GM of an NFL team and having a salary cap. What is your thoughts, Reed, when you hear this stuff about Ryan Williams saying, oh, well, maybe we need to talk about a pay cut or whatever the case may be, knowing that, listen, I mean, this guy has all the potential in the world. We all know that. But it is all, two things can be true. He's struggling right now, and we've got a number of other guys who are going to be deserving, right? It's like Lotsier Brooks, let's just use him because it's a prime example. I mean, let's just be honest. He's outplaying Ryan Williams right now. That's not a shot at Ryan Williams. That's just, we're just being completely honest. He's being outplayed by Lotsier Brooks. Do you think this is kind of a stretch that some people are saying, hey, we need to look at giving Ryan a pay cut, or do you think it's warranted at this point?
Well, first thing I want to notice is like the whole thing that you referenced about like this person comes out and signs a new deal to return to the team. That is just blowing my mind. I mean, what, if you would have told me that 5 years ago that in the offseason people are having to sign new deals in order to return to that team, I mean, that's just crazy. But to get to your point, it's actually funny you mentioned that. I talked to a buddy last night around 11 p.m., and he was asking me that same exact question. He was like, hey, man, you know, with how Brooks played, how are they going to do the whole NIL thing? And it got me thinking, and I'm like, of course I'll answer it, but I'll kind of flip it back to you as well. If you were in Ryan Williams' shoes, or like let's just say you as a player, right, your freshman year, you start out, okay, you're getting multiple pressures, good amount of sacks, right? They're like, yeah, this guy is like future, you know, first round draft pick. And then coming to your sophomore year, you hit like a slump, you get a boulder in the road, and you like the production just goes down, you know? How I would go about it, I mean, it's tough. It's tough because I would almost have to keep it straightforward of like, hey, look, you know, credit, you did great your freshman year. And not to say that you aren't deserving of this, but he stepped up, you know?
Yeah.
But how would you, like, as a player and a former player, like, receive that news of, hey, this other guy that's younger than you, you know, his freshman year, he started out, and he's out beating you in your sophomore kind of slump, and you know what I mean? Like, how would you take that?
Well, here's the thing. I'm a very honest and realistic person. So if the guy behind me was playing better than me, like, say this, we'll use me as an example, and say my sophomore year after having 10 sacks, my sophomore year, I've got 1.5, and the freshman that they brought in, he's gone off for like 7. If they came to me and they told me, hey, man, and because they're paying, listen, I mean, I don't know the specific numbers, but according to On3, they had Ryan as what, making, I think, 7 figures, if I'm not mistaken. I think Ryan was up in like the 7-figure. Again, I'm not trying to pocket watch. This is all public knowledge that it was reported. And we don't know how true it is. We're just going off of that. Regardless, he was the highest paid, I think, like in the SEC, or one of them at least. Might not be the case anymore after A&M just did their deal, which, again, like, I agree with you. It's crazy we're talking about that in college. But to me, I would say, listen, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, like, in the league, but see, this is why it's different than the NFL. In the NFL, I mean, like, you're like, people are signed to different contracts to different lengths, so it doesn't work exactly the same. But that's why it's a little interesting in college, because every year, I mean, technically a player can just go back with their representation and say, hey, man, go put on the desk of that coach or whoever, the GM. Hey, look, this is our client. This is our player. He did this, that, and the third. He's got these offers now. In the NFL, it don't work like that. If you're under contract, you're under contract. Now, sometimes there's, you know, situations in the NFL where somebody can, you know, pressure a team into giving them an extension or something. But other than that, if you're signed, you're signed. But to answer your question, man, listen, I feel like at the end of the day, I mean, like, Ryan definitely has that potential, and we know how special he can be. So I think it just depends on your view on it, right? I mean, does this staff want to bet on, hey, man, this guy probably will return to form at some point. And he's just going through a slump. Or do they look at it as, hey, man, he's kind of eating into our stuff right now, and then we'd like for him to take a little bit of a cut. I'm trying to think if there's an – I think – didn't there's another quarterback. I think a quarterback took a cut. Was it Arch Manning? I feel like Arch Manning.
I think I think it was him. But I think now that I think about it a little bit more, Christian, I think the question more is, so if we do not, like, not necessarily taking away from Ryan Williams, but if we don't, let's just say Brooks wants like a new quote unquote deal or whatever.
Listen, I don't even think it's a matter of if. I don't even think it's him. I'm telling you right now, because these guys have agents. Like, there's legit agents. I'm telling you right now, whoever represents Brooks, they're already going to be working that for him.
So yeah. So when like if we don't, you know, match or give him, you know, kind of what they're like, what his agent's wanting, some other team just might, you know. And I think that's an issue that we're going to have to kind of go head on when the time comes.
But and that's a great point, and that's why it does actually come up to the question that you might have to respectfully ask somebody to take a pay cut. Because think about it, I mean, somebody's going to be, like you just mentioned, offering Brooks whatever, right? You're going to have to up that. So it's got to come from somewhere, because with the revenue sharing, there's only so much. Again, it's like a cap. Now, this is why I think it shouldn't be as much of a problem as some people might anticipate. There are genuine NIL deals, and Ryan Williams is probably one of the, like, when it comes to college football and guys, you know, actually having true NIL, I mean, his marketability is up there with the rest of them. So say, you know, you decrease maybe what he's getting from, like, the revenue sharing standpoint, he's still going to be being paid handsomely from all of the other actual NIL deals, regardless if he's got a little bit of a slump going on right now or not. I mean, the dude's still on the cover of NCAA. The dude's still doing all type Nike deals, all type of stuff. So, and plus, we're not talking – we ain't even got to the point where, I mean, the dude clearly loves Alabama. I mean, I remember from his recruitment, that was the whole thing. I mean, it seemed like he was always Alabama through and through. So, that said, it definitely is an interesting conversation. I know I probably just kind of said a whole lot of nothing. But I guess my point is, if you have to do something like that, so be it. But I don't even want to get in the conversation like, oh, if you had to make a choice between one or the other – that's tough. I'll let you guys answer that. I don't even know where you go from there, because that's a tough decision. But I don't know. We'll do this. Let's hit a top hour break. You guys think about that. How would you guys play out that situation? If you guys were the GM and you had to manage this whole roster, and you're looking at it and you're like, hey, we got one guy who's our highest paid guy on our team, and right now he's just not producing the way, you know, neither us or he probably anticipated. Then we got some young up and comers that are clearly some special talents, man. And they're still on their quote-unquote, what is called rookie deals. And we know they're going to be expecting, maybe not them themselves, but their representatives, they're going to be expecting something. How would you handle that? Let us know, 205-342-9904. We come back after this top hour break. We keep breaking this down. We got the tape up. We'll keep answering y'all's questions. We'll keep rolling all that right here on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230, WTVC.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Chris Perfect.
Early in the game in Detroit, Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver DK Metcalf was apparently involved in an altercation with a fan at Ford Field. The CBS broadcast managed to catch Metcalf talking to the fan and then shoving them after words were exchanged. Referees of the game did not catch the incident. The NFL has yet to weigh in on what is going to happen to the wide receiver. News quarterback Gardner Minshew is feared to have suffered a torn ACL in Sunday's tilt against the Tennessee Titans. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson came out of his game on Sunday Night Football in the second quarter. Reports indicate he suffered a back bruise and he's now considered day-to-day. Quinshon Judkins, running back for the Cleveland Browns, faces faces a 4 to 5 month recovery window after breaking his leg in Sunday. The Boston Red Sox are acquiring first baseman Wilson Contreras in a trade with the St. Louis Cardinals that went down late Sunday.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case. And this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise with Us on our website.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing
victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393-9149 for your free estimate today. That's 205-393-9149. Asphalt Restoration, where smooth roads start. Roll Tide.
And knocked down again. It was Christian Miller.
It's time for the Miller's Edge with four-time SEC champion and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here is college football playoff national champion
Christian Miller
on Tide 100.9
and 1230 AM WTBC.
And welcome back into this Victory Monday. It is for the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Art Sport Experts. We're breaking down this 34-24 victory over Oklahoma. Talking a little bit about some, I guess, some hypotheticals, right? In terms of putting our GM caps on and playing out how we would handle some of these situations, some of these, probably conversations, Reed, we should call them, because they're going to be coming up, right? And they probably might already be happening. But hopefully these guys are still locked in on the mission at hand, and that comes at a later time. But that being said, hour number two officially underway. We already kind of broke down, at least, I guess, verbally, our thoughts from the game. Again, Alabama down 17. The story of the game was almost an inverse of what happened last time. Oklahoma outgained us, but we capitalized on some costly mistakes on their end, made some big plays when we needed it most, came back from a 17-0 start to go on a 27-0 run. And, hey, the rest was history, man. We were able to close things out in Norman, third time's the charm, and we're heading on to the Rose Bowl, where we're going to face the Heisman Trophy winner, Mendoza. How do you pronounce it? Is it Fernando?
Fernando Mendoza.
For some reason, I was like, wait, Fernando? Fernando Mendoza. So I've always just said Mendoza, so I forgot the exact pronunciation of his first name. We'll face the Heisman Trophy winner. We'll face a former Bama coach in Cignetti. Then we'll also be facing my former high school teammate, John Miller, right? And the reason I say that is, no, he's not on the roster. He's on the staff. My teammate from high school, cool story, is the running backs coach for Indiana right now. And we're close, really close. We're not family. We got the same last name. But John broke, you know, numerous rushing records at Spring Valley High School. I hold the sack record in probably every category, not to brag on myself, but it is pretty cool to be able to say it. Single season sacks, single game sacks, career sacks with 38, 24 in a season, then 5 in a game. Anyway, John Miller was like, you know, that dude on the offensive side of the football, and he broke a lot of rushing records. He's now their running backs coach. So really cool that we'll be playing against him and his guys. I'd love to get him on the show. Now, I don't know how their staff handles that. letting coaches speak to the media, especially the team that they're playing. But I would love to chop it up with them. So maybe we'll see if we can work on that. But anyway, 205-342-9904. I promise I'm going to get back into more in-depth of this breakdown on this tape. But just make sure you guys tell me exactly where to go. That way we can try to skip around. But first, let's go to the phone lines. We got Smitty up first. Smitty, welcome in.
How's it going, Christian?
Man, I can't complain, brother. How's everything?
Well, besides the fact my Bucks are blowing a division, everything is all right. Hey,
All that talking you were doing too, bro.
Hey, man. All I got to say is they complain Ty Bowles with zero blitz before the half, but common sense should tell the cornerback don't let the guy run behind you when that's the only play they can run. Anyway, that's why I hate when folks blame coaches and everything. Players got to have some common sense as well, you know. And this is another case of guys in the NFL, you can't give up on these young quarterbacks so soon. And Bryce has been playing well. But if you get rid of these guys, you know how it is. When you want to get rid of folks, who's the next guy? Then you got to start over again. But about the game, Kyle did something I've been saying for weeks. Just throw it up on a 50-50 ball. Give you guys a chance to get a flag. If it's an interception, so be it. Because if you're scared to turn the ball over, you're no good to anybody. You're Kirk Cousins throwing short of sticks on fourth down the season, or you're Aaron Rodgers, who's a great QB, but he's always been too careful. And you got a ceiling. And I just think that sometimes you just got to let it rip because, yes, a run game could open things up, but the willingness to chuck it deep will also open things up as well because they know you're going to take that shot. And look what happened. You know, opened things up. And the receivers actually made plays. And they caught the ball. And I'll say this real quick. Everybody loves to talk about Ryan Williams. We're in the playoffs. We got a role with who is catching the ball. We'll worry about all this stuff in January, end of January. I know that sounds mean, but you can't afford to work on somebody's confidence when you go and get the number one team in the country. You got it ain't no knock on them. You get what I'm saying? Ain't no knock on them. You just got to roll with Brooks and Horton, who dropped the big one in the first quarter, you know, and Bernard. And y'all talk the NIL stuff. NIL is different than the rev share. And this is possibly – now, I don't think Ryan is transferring. But this is the downside of everybody wanting to sign one-year deals because the school could back off and say, hey, yeah, I need you to take a little bit off the top here. Take a haircut. Right. And that's why some of these guys do transfer. But it's not fair to someone like Brooks, who has actually, we've been honest, kind of outplayed Ryan all year long. We'll be honest with you. Yeah. And to say, no, we can't give you an increase because we got to still pay this guy that. Now, maybe you could work it out. But I just think that Ryan just has to work on his fundamentals this offseason. You got to catch with your hand. And you got to work on your route running as well.
That's what I kept trying to say. Like, you know, last year when my dad and I were talking about when he was coming into college, like those are the things that, like, when everybody was like, oh man, well, you see what he's doing in high school in the Under Armour game. That's what we kept saying. Like, that's great, but you have to see how it translates. And listen, last year, don't get me wrong. I mean, he surprised me for sure. I mean, those plays he made, I mean, he made some big plays, he made some big time catches, and just seeing him with the ball. After the catch, I mean, he's one of the best when it comes to that ability. That said, though, at this level, I mean, you can't be a one-trick pony, right? You got to be able to do all those things if you want to have success. And that's why I've always said, like, when I watch on tape, I mean, personally, I feel like, you know, there could be more from him when it comes to his routes, right? We already know the drops thing. That's got to get cleaned up. But I think it's a matter of if he can just get his confidence back, clean up his fundamentals. I mean, he'll go back to being one of the top receivers. I have faith in that. But also understand, like you said, that's how everybody does things, right? Everybody does the one-year deal thing because they want to keep coming back to get more and more. But this is kind of the negative side of that where, again, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think I know we got Tia and folks. I know, I always try to protect the players. And that's why I'm not, like, going in on anybody. I just think it's a fair conversation because – I don't think it would be an issue if Alabama respectfully asked to maybe do some type of little pay cut. Arch Manning did it. right? We see NFL quarterbacks do it. Why do they do it? Sometimes it has nothing to do with their play. It has everything to do with they want to be able to get more guys. And if you guys want to continue to recruit at a high level, it might not be ideal to have so much money tied up into one player, let alone, you know, when you have other players at the same position that are producing and they're going to need to be compensated. That's just a fact. So I think it's an interesting conversation. I haven't given up on Ryan. I think he's going to come back to life. And I'm with you, though. I don't think you need to force things to him. I know I said you got to find ways to give him the football. That doesn't mean just keep, you know, throwing the ball 9 times a game right now when you got guys like Brooks. But no, you always feed the hot hand. However, if there's ways you can get him on jet sweeps or screen game or just running, you know, rub routes that you know you can set him up, let him run a quick whip route like we saw in Georgia, just, you know, quick little throws, things that we know, you know what I'm saying, he can do. Then with the ball in his hands, he's special. I'm definitely an advocate for doing that, but I'm with you too, though. I mean, if you got Brooks, who's hot, and you got Horton and Bernard, whichever one, you know, is really feeling it, or it could be him, you always lean into that. So that's my thought on that.
And the one thing I will say is that part of sacks is a quarterback stat, and I was yelling at the TV when Ty went, everybody, why do you go 5 wide? And I think the TV did a great job of highlighting that the play was supposed to go to Quavis, but Ty never looked this way. And the defender said, oh, the tight end split out. You all know that. You know that you play. Oh, they're going to split the tight end out of my side. Oh, I'm coming, you know. and Ty didn't see that. And maybe we could have got a touchdown there. And that's something he has to work on as well, make sure he sees everything. Because that's a play right there. But I know it's hard for a certain section of Alabama fans to say, Kay and the board did a good job. It's okay for people to say that, you know, because the thing is, we've seen teams quit all year long, and some in the SEC who hired new coaches. It would have been easy for this team to fold a tent. They didn't quit against Georgia. They just got their butts kicked. Let's just be real. They tried, and that happens. You know, but this game, they didn't quit. They didn't roll over. They made adjustments. Everybody cries about no adjustments. Guess what? Kane Woman made adjustments. The offense made adjustments how they went with the quick huddles and stuff like that. And it ended up working. And I think what happens is that it shows this team is not soft. They are tough because of being in that place where everybody in the world wants you to lose. You got media members openly wanting you to lose, wanting your coach to leave. And they circled the wagons and said, no, we're not losing this game. And they dominated after that first quarter because most of Oklahoma yards came in that first quarter. That shows a lot about the resolve of this team and how the leadership of this coaching staff and how tough they are. And I know people love saying, oh, West Coast, West Coast. Those are Southern teams led by Southern coaches who quit in the SEC this year. It's all about being a leader. And I think that shows that they have the right guy. It may not be pretty. It may not be 2015. But they are one game away from a semifinal against a team they can beat. Well, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. It's my opinion. Do I think they'll win a national title? No. But I like the fact that they ain't quitting. They're fighting. They're making a run. Because you know this playing in the league. You just want to get in the dance and see what happens, let the chips fall there, mate.
Yeah. I mean, that's and once you get in the on you know, in the playoffs or on that level, man, I mean, anything can happen. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, personally, when I look at this team, I think we're still, you know, a little bit behind a team maybe like Ohio State or even Indiana.
Yeah.
But, again, it's the playoffs, and we know anything can happen. You know, I mean, listen, it happens all the time. So, if we can find a way to continue to build off of what we saw in the 2.5-3 quarters in this game outside the first quarter. Listen, I think this team is good enough to play with just about anybody, but I think it requires us to be like literally on our A game, meaning we're able to hit those shots like you talked about, right? You're seeing guys come up with catches that like Bernard, right, that they probably shouldn't make, just like Oklahoma. Think about how many times their guys made those plays on the sideline. Like, those are the type of plays you have to have if you want to win playoff games. And defense has to continue to keep bowing up, playing strong, and building off of what they're doing. They're doing a really nice job as well. And I'm with you, man. I just, to me, the adjustments alone made me feel great, just seeing like, all right, that's one of the biggest differences from this year than last year. Last year, we didn't see these types of adjustments, especially on the defense side of things. This year, we're coming out, we're playing a lot of soft zone, not getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They get more aggressive, they bring pressure, they switch to playing a lot more man coverage, and it made a world's difference with that Oklahoma offense, who had a lot of success in that first quarter. Outside of that, they didn't have much going for them. They still had him. That receiver did make a play or two, and they did miss an opportunity, that one where Mateer was rolling out. He probably could have ran for the first down, and he tried to hit it. I think it was his running back who was wide open. He had a drop. That wasn't, you know, an error on Mateer's part. You can't really blame him. Yes, you could argue to take the first down, but when you got a free guy running down the field for an easy touchdown,
you got to throw it.
Yeah, I mean, that's that guy's fault. That's not on Mateer. But anyway, you know, defense played much better, got pressure on the quarterback finally. And listen, I think when we play like that, we can play with about anybody. But I'm with you, man. I think some people are kind of sleeping on Indiana just because I think they're still caught up
and
looking at the logo. Yeah, they're one of the best overall teams. They might not come off as like elite when you watch them, but they do a lot of stuff really well. And I think they're probably one of the most complete teams, if not the most, in the country. And watch them play Ohio State, man. I mean, Mendoza, good football player. I mean, he doesn't make a whole bunch of mistakes. So that's why I'm saying we're going to have to be on our A game, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But no, I agree with you, man. You're right. And I'm excited to see what we can do with the next opportunity, Smitty.
Yeah. And the thing is, my dad always says, game has to be played. And I know there's 7-point favorite. Hey, that's cool. It doesn't bother me. I think that's great for us motivation-wise, because they pretty much say they're going to whoop your butts there. But the thing is also, this young defense, and I've been saying it, is the most improved unit in the country from where they started off. And and you could tell those boys are hungry. And even though I know that Keon Keeley sacked, even though it was like unblocked, the thing I looked at was his closing speed. That's the thing you look at. And you got a lot of young guys like Collins, Kelby Collins, and Noah Carter making it happen, along with Yonze Pierre, and Tim Keenan looks healthy. And we got a good DB room. And I think if we beat this team, it's our defense. And I'll leave you with this. Thanks for my call as always. Man, Daniel Hill played his butt off. But man, we gotta get some more speed in that running back room. But he did his job though, because he did a good job of what he had. He caught the ball fine. He got good runs when he needed to be hit the hole. Even though he was the fastest guy, but he hit the hole and got in for that touchdown. And I thought our offensive line played well considering the amount of time Oklahoma blitzed. Because when you blitz to that many people, somebody's gonna get through. But I thought they did a good enough job. And the most important thing, how you know Kalen DeBoer has done a good job. We ain't had too many of these crazy double-digit penalty games in months. And I don't know how many penalties they had Friday, but I knew it probably wasn't even five. And that shows this team is locked in, they're disciplined, and they're not beating themselves. But, hey, if we lose this game to Indiana, it's going to be because they're just a better team, not because we beat ourselves. And I look forward to it. But thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you, Smitty. Good deal. We're going to hit a timeout. When we come back, we'll hear from head coach Kalen DeBoer. He's speaking to the media right now, live as we speak. But we'll be a minute or two behind because we're going to hit a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll hear from the head coach after beating Oklahoma in the first round of the college football playoffs, 34-24 on the road. Biggest comeback, I think, at least in the playoff system, if I'm not mistaken. And first ever head coach to win a playoff game on the road. We'll hear from him.
With Allstate. Not available in every state. Only applicable for new auto insurance business. Rates will vary by several factors, including how you purchase the policy. Potential savings vary. Allstate North American Insurance Company and Affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case. In this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, Call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393-9149 for your free estimate today. That's 205-393-9149. Asphalt Restoration, where smooth roads start. Roll Tide.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly cloudy this afternoon with just a slight chance of a light shower, mainly west. Temperatures near 60. Tonight stays cloudy and mild, lows near 50. Tomorrow turns warmer with some afternoon sunshine, pushing highs into the upper 60s to lower 70s. I'm meteorologist Bill Murray on Tide 100.9.
It's 64 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
And welcome back into this Victory Monday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's art support experts. All right, I'm done talking for a minute. We're going to go to the head coach, Kalen DeBoer, who's currently speaking to the media right now as he previews the matchup, the next matchup, the next round, where we'll take on Indiana in the Rose Bowl.
Kalen DeBoer, head coach, make his opening statement, and we'll take questions from Zoom and Karen.
Yeah, you bet. Good afternoon. And
wait, coach, 1 second. We're going to start the webinar. Just 1 second, okay?
Yep.
Coach, I'll start the webinar and just give a quick opening, and then we'll go right into you, okay? Yep. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining today's head coach teleconference for the college football playoff quarterfinal of the Rose Bowl game presented by Prudential. I'm Karen Lindenhart, the Rose Bowl Games Marketing and Media Director. We're joined first today by Alabama head coach Kalen DeBoer. Following Coach DeBoer's session, we'll have a 15-minute break before we are joined by Indiana head coach Kurt Cignetti. The call will remain live during that time. Coach DeBoer, I'll let you start with the opening remark.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just, excited about this opportunity to be in the Rose Bowl, special event and big-time game. I know our guys are excited. We got 15 California football players on our team that are excited to go play closer to home and even more from the West Coast. So that's one piece of it, but obviously the game itself and what it means and our opportunity to continue to take the next step. But we understand we got a great football team with Indiana coach Cignetti. Just what he's done is amazing here these last 2 years, just building the program as quickly as he's done to the level it's at. And really looking forward to us diving back into our process here the next 10 days or so, just getting back to work. Really important days. I thought we did a great job from the SEC championship to the first round game in a lot of ways, whether it's the preparation. I got to give a tip of the hat to our training staff and our doctors, Jeff Allen, who runs our training room downstairs with his staff, an amazing job, just putting people together and getting guys as healthy as they could have. Dr. Kane, Dr. Waldrop, Dr. Stewart, we just got a top tier group, and I know there's even more, but just everything they did to get our guys to where they played fast and we're as healthy as we've been in a long time. So need that again here the next 10 days. On the speed part, I mean, our guys, Coach Ballou, I need to give him credit too, our head strength coach. We had as many guys hit their top speeds as we have since the Tennessee game, and that's tied for the most over 20 miles an hour, all year. So it's great to have more players playing fast in the big moments. But looking forward to the challenge. Our guys are as well.
Thank you, Coach. We'll now open up the teleconference for questions. Please raise your hand to ask a question using the raise hand icon within Zoom. If and when your question is selected, please unmute your microphone and state your name and media outlet before asking your question. Once your question has been answered, your microphone will be muted and your hand will be lowered. Our first question comes from Nicole Auerbach.
Hey, Kalen, it's Nicole Auerbach from NBC Sports. I wanted to ask, just with you and Kurt Cignetti,
in this matchup got me thinking about just the unique paths that you both took to become head coaches at places like Alabama and Indiana. And I wonder how your path and all the different stops and all the levels of college football helped prepare you to lead a program at the highest level with all that's changing in college football today.
You know, just knowing Coach Cignetti, and you referred to it, his path, nothing but respect. Again, how he's done it, how he's gotten to this spot. A lot of work goes into it. I think coming back to your question, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I think there's things that you do that give you an appreciation for the moment you're in, having an opportunity to be here at Alabama. But I also think there's moments that you go through. I mean, with the playoffs the way they are, and it, you know, us having to go four rounds, been through that many, many years, whether it was as an assistant or as a head coach, going back to Sioux Falls days. And then I think building a staff and, you know, having the network and the contacts has helped me surround people with a lot of knowledge, but also the right type of people to help lead you, especially in today's day and age of college football and building a team. And, you know, I think all of it goes into just being built for these moments that come. But I've been really blessed. I've been blessed to be around a lot of great coaches who have mentored me along the way that I've taken things from, to be able to be successful in the moments that we're in now.
Our next question will come from Jeff Rabjohns.
Hey coach, how you doing? Jeff Rabjohns, Peace.com here. Good to see you. Good to talk to you. As far as the game goes, Indiana's rushing attack has been really productive, even though, you know, Mendoza won the Heisman, has been the kind of guy getting more attention. I'd like your thoughts from a coaching chair. What makes Indiana's running game good, and how good do you feel Indiana's offensive line has been and is playing going into this game?
Yeah, so diving into it, but a thing that jumps out at me, just with kind of the first glance here the last day or so, is how well they work together, the offensive line in particular, and just everyone being in sync. They're always moving forward, and you know, on the opposite end, the defense, you know, has the tackles for losses and is physical as well. So, but I just think that, you know, with obviously Mendoza and winning the Heisman, I mean, that doesn't happen by accident. You put a whole season of film together, of games, and stringing them each and every week, and you end up undefeated because a trigger man can make some plays and do his thing at an extremely high level. You know, look at their skill around the offensive line. They just all complement each other. They go make plays. When the opportunities are there, they get it done. And there's great coaching that you can see to put them in spots to succeed. But also the guys, you can see they play with a swagger, with a confidence, you know, and as they should with the success they've had.
Our next question comes from Nick Hamilton.
Hey, coach. First of all, congratulations on making the Rose Bowl. Also want to ask you, just how have you seen your defense grow exponentially since playing in the SEC, and now you guys are in the CFP, gaining a victory at Oklahoma, and now you're playing in the Rose Bowl. What are some of the traits that you've seen along the way that give your team even more confidence?
Well, I think there was a point, you know, it was early in the season where our guys defensively just kind of kept taking those steps, and through conference play, you know, got the turnovers in big moments that helped us win games, you know, the stops that were needed, forcing field goals. And I think, you know, that continued to breed a kind of a belief at a high level. And they've been able to do it different ways. And the first quarter maybe wasn't our best quarter, but they were fighting and coming off the field, ready to solve problems, to come up with solutions, whether that's the coaching staff or our players. I know that our whole team is going to fight, but you're asking about the defense in particular. I know that they went out there. They're very, you know, proud of what they've accomplished, and, you know, really did a nice job as the game went along of making adjustments to get more pressure on the quarterback, to you know, obviously come up with an interception for a touchdown, just continue to play. And the game came back to us. We talk about that as a program, but the game came back to us because everyone just continued to stay the course and force them, even when they got into our territory, to force field goals. And that's a mindset you know, that no matter where you step on the football field, you know, you're just going to play that play, play it to the best of your ability. And our guys do that.
Our next question comes from Zachary Osterman.
Hi, Kalen. Thanks for making the time. Hope all's well your way. You know, I imagine you haven't like sort of deep dived into Indiana just the last few years. But I'm curious, you were around here at a time when this program was really emphasizing investment in football and really sort of trying to be bold about, you know, sort of dreaming bigger and pushing the boat out farther. As you've sort of, in what you have been able to see of Coach Cignetti, do you see more of that, that basically kind of the impact of a place really investing in a way that says we want to be more competitive in football and we're going to be really proactive about it?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I do pay attention just because it's a place I've been, and pay a little more attention. I can't say, you know, you're worried about your own place and where you're at, but, you know, I felt like when we were there that there was a growth and an investment that was happening, and there was success that was in 19 when I was there that, you know, felt like you were getting over the hump, and that extended to the next season as well. But, you know, there's certainly, I mean, Coach Cignetti's done a great job providing the spark, which, you know, really it leads to people continuing to be all in. And as you get more people all in, you get the moments that you're in right now. And so I think it works off of each other, the energy and the commitment to the success, working hand in hand with the people that are there. So, you know, nothing but a great time there that I had. It was short lived, but you know, one that I remember my family as well.
Our next question comes from Kennington Smith.
Hey, Coach DeBoer, hope you're doing well. I actually have two questions, if I may. The first is about Bray Hubbard. Obviously, his play against Florida State garnered negative attention, and we get to the end of the season, he's an All-American. How have you seen him just progress throughout the season, and maybe what type of lesson is there, you know, how he started and kind of how he's finished up the season?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, Bray, he is who he is. I know he was super disappointed, as well as many guys were, with week one, you know, with this, the production. I would never really question how important it is to him. It means so much to play at a high level, but even more to do it with his teammates. He's a team guy, and he's just continued to lead us. It doesn't matter if it's on the field, off the field. He's a top tier person, first of all. And, you know, I think the work ethic he brings is something that, you know, trickles on to the rest of the guys. And, you know, he takes it upon himself to make sure that, yes, the unit that's on the field, the ones, the twos, you know, that they're playing at a high level, held to the standard, but he also cares about it trickling down to the players who are going to be the future here too. And just, yeah, he's an extremely hard player. He's a playmaker in the big moments. You've seen him end up with the ball in his hands, interceptions, you know, at critical times. And he's going to come down in the box. He can play out in space. Just does a lot of things for us that are really important to our success defensively.
Yeah, and then Xavien Brown, you kind of mentioned big plays. That's kind of been his story since he's been at Alabama. What has allowed him to meet those moments? And then, you know, also just kind of what type of opportunity is it for him and, you know, other guys who are from California to get a chance to go back there and play in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, ZB is – he's been – you can call it the right place, but I think you make your own breaks too. And, you know, there's times where, you know, the – You happen to be in the right spot, but there's also times where you put the work in, and I see what he does with his film study. I see what he does on the football field in practice, whether it's technically, just how important it is for him to be on the same page with the guys around him so he can take those, I don't want to call them, they're calculated risks, or, you know, have an aggressiveness about him to go make the plays, knowing where his help's at pre-snap, while the play's happening. He's a really heady player, obviously a great athlete and playmaker. And so I think for him, you know, as well as all these guys going out to California, it's just a really cool moment for them. They're just such great kids. They're not kids, but young men, whose families have to travel long ways each and every week. And this time they get to return the favor back to their families and go out there and play in front of them, and as well as many friends that I'm sure will be at the game.
We have time for one more question. Our last question will come from Mike Schumann.
Yeah, hey, Coach. Mike Schumann of the Daily Hoosier. Wanted to ask you about Kane. He was obviously there at Indiana with you, and I'm just curious, like, what was it about him? I'm assuming his time at Indiana played a heavy influence on you wanting to bring him on board at Alabama. What stood out? Is there anything about his time at Indiana that really stands out to you? And I guess also just like, what's it like for all of you guys? I know there's a lot of IU guys, former IU guys on staff to come full circle and play this game against Indiana.
Yeah, I'd probably be missing some Coach Ballou, Coach Sheridan. But your reference to Kane, here's what I saw when I was there. First of all, a guy that really wanted me to come be a part of it. And then when I was there, did everything he could to be a team player. You know, he was focused on running a defense. I was the offense coordinator, but practice plans, schedules, whatever it was, he would be willing to work with you to help make sure it was best for our team and not just his side of the ball. And then there obviously has to be a production and a style of coaching that you feel fits. And, you know, whether it's what he does as a defensive coordinator or especially down here now with his home being, you know, for the most part being down here in the Southeast, what he could bring as far as the familiarity to the league, the region. It was a great fit, a great opportunity. And, for him to jump on board and be a part of this. You can see what he's done with our defense. He's a great coach, great person, great family man. Our players really believe in him. Our staff does too, as he manages them. So it's been really, really a great, great opportunity. And I'm glad that he was a big part of me coming there, trying to get me to Indiana. I'm glad he returned a favor and came when I called him as well.
Thank you, Coach. That will conclude the first portion of today's teleconference. Thank you for joining us today. Media members, you're welcome to stay on the line until we're joined by Coach Cignetti at 10:45 p.m. Pacific, 1:45 p.m. Eastern.
All right. Thank you, Karen. We'll go ahead and take some questions from our group here. Let's start with Chase, front row to the left.
Second half of the Oklahoma game, Tim Keenan needed some help getting off the field. Can you update us on how he's doing and also if there's anything new with LT Overton?
Yeah, I know he was a little bit sore. Tim was a little bit sore after the game, but I'm expecting that he'll be good to go. Maybe still working through it here early in the week, but we got some time, and so I'm expecting him to be good to go. LT, just continue to monitor him. Definitely not ruling him out right now, but we'll continue to evaluate him and see how things go here in the days ahead.
Put the far right side, Charlie.
That Red Morgan also visited the 10. Is he good to go? Do you expect the same thing?
Yeah, I expect him again, lower extremity. Really kind of the same as TK. You know, I would expect him to be ready to go, but the last couple of days and today he's still a little bit sore.
Go to Nick, right front row, right.
Yeah, another Indiana question for you. Do you have a favorite memory from that time you were there?
I'm just curious what you've seen from Freddie and the defensive line at the back half of the season. It seems like they've improved pretty dramatically.
Yeah, I think the first key is that these guys up front that we play with discipline, you know, and making sure that you take care of your gap, that, you're trying to take on blocks more than one and eating up those if you can, so that way, depending on the call, so that way our linebackers and even our safeties can come down and fit it up correctly. And when they do their job, the rest of it kind of falls into place as far as where the ball gets spilled to or where it gets leveraged to. And, that starts with them, because once they come out of a gap and all of a sudden the ball winds back somewhere where it's not supposed to, or pass rush lane, opens up and a quarterback can take off. We face some mobile quarterbacks here the back half of the season. So, again, they've done a nice job of just being disciplined and working together. And that, you know, that's a team thing, you know, because they don't always get the highlights and the stats. They just got to do their part to help our defense be successful.
Coach, you mentioned diving back into the process. Over the next 10 days, what do you want to replicate from the OU prep that you saw specifically heading into the Rose Bowl?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that's nice right now is you don't have school, you know, and so I think our guys just, you know, I told them, I go, I love playing night games because I just feel like, again, this isn't discredit an opponent, but it's just that much confidence I have in our guys about how they care, them using every minute and moment that they can to get better, to improve, to prepare, might be watching film on game day, you know, just more than, you know, the opponent, just out preparing. And so I thought our guys did a great job being present. There's times they can get away from the facility, but being present in our meetings, in our practice, I thought the energy was as good as it's been. And again, I think there's less to the day, so they're focused on football, the excitement of the playoff, and now that continuing on, going on the next round, especially with kind of how we finished the game and played. I just stay with the process. We understand what's worked. Keep making it better. We have to keep getting better because, you know, obviously we were down 17-0 at one point and there's a reason for that. And so as a team, we need to continue to improve, make sure that those things are shored up to where we can start faster.
Kind of a calendar question for you with, you know, prep for the Rose Bowl, obviously the portal window opens shortly after the Rose Bowl. What does kind of your attention look like, not only for, you know, preparing for this game, but for, you know, what's the conference for retention?
Like, yeah, no, I think there's conversations the coaches are continuing to have, just, you know, just our antennas are up, you know. And I think the one thing I appreciate about our whole team, and that's coaches and players together, I think there's really strong relationships and conversations that can be had in a way where, you know, you can be really upfront and honest and talk through things. And there's a care that these guys have for each other to where, first and foremost, we want to take advantage of what we've done all season. This is why you did all the work, is to be able to play in this game. But there also is a reality of that time coming when the portal does open, and just talking through any of the what ifs, any of the different scenarios, and every guy's situation is different. Us just kind of making sure that, you know, if there is any type of, I don't call it red flag, but anything that you kind of think might happen, let's talk about it, you know. And we've been open. I think that's how we retained a lot of our roster at different times, at different levels, over the last year and a half, 2 years. And that's what I would hope we would continue to do with our coaching staff and the relationship, as well as our players and the way they care about the program, as well as this season and finishing strong.
Let's go to Joe in the back.
Coach, on Friday night, Ty Simpson started 3 of 6 for 17 yards, took a sack, but then he hit the pass to Lozier Brooks for the first down, and he really got going, finishing 15 of 23 for 215 yards. What changed for Ty Simpson maybe on that fourth drive, and how can he kind of capture that, keep that momentum rolling for the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, I think that throw to Lottie was probably the one that sparked us as a team, got us into their territory on the third down, the flag route or corner route. I think we were close. You know, we had the first third down throw catch that just fell incomplete. I think that would have been huge for us. There's these moments, the next couple drives, you know, we took a sack on the screen. We're just trying to get an easy completion, you know, out different guys we can throw to on that screen. We didn't execute well. They pressured into it. So, again, that got us behind the sticks. You know, really, I think it was probably, was it the fourth drive then when this happened? Where we got it rolling, and it was just really more of the same. I mean, we hit a lot of quick passes that got him into a rhythm, and it was outside and inside. You know, Lottie had his catches, Cuevas had his catches kind of inside. I think it was later in the game, maybe Jay Lindsey had a catch, but you know, Isaiah caught some on the outside a little bit. And then what started to happen is he got in a rhythm, and now you saw the explosives and the ball down the field and the one-on-ones versus man, at least on a couple of them. And I think about Isaiah's in the fourth quarter, obviously Germ's catch in the fourth quarter. You know, we started hitting some routes off of a play action there in the second, in the second quarter there. I think it was, you know, a a dig route there with Isaiah. So this found a rhythm. Found a rhythm, and you know that's what we've been lacking. Now it goes both ways. Guys got to make plays, like make the easy plays. We still had too many drops. There were some simple plays where, you know, second and six, we just got to catch the ball on the sideline and go get 3 or 4 yards or more, break a tackle, and you got a first down. Some of those things we just still missed on, and we just got to clean up. And I know our guys will continue to work on that.
Let's go to Will on far left.
Coach Lottie has been a guy that throughout the year has made some big catches for you guys and been a downfield target at times as well. Obviously, you guys needed what he brought to the table on Friday night. Can you speak about just how proud you were of him finally getting into the end zone and just his performance? And then what's maybe the one area that you've seen him develop the most over his freshman year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first of all, it caught me by surprise when you said something the other night. You guys brought up that was his first touchdown. And just think about how many big plays he's made for us. You know, they weren't touchdowns, but he's an important part of our offense. He's got the ability before he catches the ball to get open one-on-one, as you saw in the corner route for the touchdown. And then obviously when he gets the ball in his hands, breaking tackles on the fourth down catch, touchdown. And then just the physicality he can bring, even though he's not this big, bigger guy, he's strong. And lower body strength as well. And so I think when it comes to the growth that he's had this season, understanding this is, you know, college football and, you know, the step that, you know, takes from the preparation, you know, you don't just roll out on the football field on a Saturday like you probably did when he was so much better than everyone he faced in high school and just go get it done. There's timing because, you know, the windows are smaller. There's focus, but and he, you can see the plays he's made. I think about the Missouri catch on fourth down. I think about different ones he's had throughout the years. You know, he's been more consistent than not, and that's impressive for a freshman. And so he's a really cool kid to be around. You got a really light, kind of got a smile on his face, you know, it's just fun to be around. And so I'm happy for him. Obviously, we needed him in a big way, and he came through.
Going to the back left.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about Daniel Hill's 30-yard run in that early third quarter. Just what did you see work on that play?
We ran a little toss to the left side there into the boundary, and you know, he made a nice cutback and kind of broke through a tackle there. And you know, the key is getting that thing started, you know, trying to get the edge on that particular play. We had some success at times. There were some times we just missed blocks on plays similar to it, maybe not the exact same one. That was, I think, the case in a number of runs, is we were just one block away. I thought we probably did a better job overall blocking the first time we played Oklahoma from just a clean pictures. But it's nothing that we can't shore up moving forward. And some of it might've been even like not just sustaining it, you know, just a guy getting over the top of us on some down blocks or crack blocks and things like that. So we just need to be better in that moment. But Daniel, I thought, did a nice job making the first guy running through a tackle there. And then I really love that, you know, knowing and understanding what Oklahoma's really good at and guys converging, kind of realizing that maybe it might be tough to spring it for a touchdown, making sure you protect the football. And he's done a great job of that and needs to continue to do a good job moving forward for us to be successful. But I thought the one that he just did a really good job on was the touchdown run, you know, running through some guys, staying on his feet, the balance. That was a big run. We got the look that we, you know, we're thinking we were probably had a chance of getting, and, you know, gave him the ball and, you know, he did a nice job, you know, finding a way to get in the end zone on his own.
Got time for a few more. Let's start on the back left, Tony.
Kind of on that, this will be your third straight time facing a top five run defense. Just have you learned, or what can you take maybe from playing Georgia and Oklahoma's run defense into, I think, what's the number three run defense in the nation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is the tackle for losses is what you got to really try to guard against. And this is a team, I think, maybe is just right around or ahead or behind Oklahoma and in that category. Attacking style, guys that, you know, shed blocks, that play physical, use their hands, they're violent. And so, you know, those game, these games hopefully prepare you. And again, you find ways to improve, whether it's individually your assignment and your job or just, you know, schematically, but, you know, they present it in different ways. So it might not be the same schemes you run. But it's to me, it's about, you know, you just understanding one, you got to do your job, but then everyone working together. And that's where we got to make sure we continue to improve, to stay away from the tackles for losses. Cause you get behind the chains and teams like Oklahoma, Georgia, and now obviously Indiana, you know, they'll find a way to make you pay for it.
Standing up on the back right.
Last year, all four teams that won their first round game also.
We're actually going to hit a quick timeout because we I know there's a couple more questions, but what I'm going to do is we're running out of time here on radio. I want to make sure we squeeze everything in. So we'll hit a quick timeout real quick. When we come back, we'll have to close things out quick. But don't worry, I'm going to stay behind on the stream, and we're going to continue the stream going because I got the tape here. We hadn't had a chance to look at that, so we'll do all that. But we'll be quick here in closing things out here in a minute on radio. But the stream will continue at the Miller's Edge on YouTube if you guys want.
But if you test positive, prescription medications for COVID exist. Ask your doctor if they're right for you. Visit PfizerForAll.com to learn more. Sponsored by Pfizer.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
And welcome back into this Victory Monday. This is the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTVC. We had a few more minutes. I know we had a phone call, so I wanted to see if we could squeeze that in. 205-342-9904. KJ, you still with us?
Yo, what's up, man?
What's up, man? Sorry, that press conference was going way longer than I thought, but we got a couple minutes, man.
You're good.
I want to get your opinion because I know you're about to say something. I got a feeling on what I know what it's about. It's about the Ryan conversation.
Hey, just the comment about, like, Brooks had a better season than him. I disagree with that. Like, everything else what you guys are talking about, I'm with you. Yeah,
but you disagree on that?
Yeah. I think that's like recency bias just, you know, creeping up on people. I saw somebody even saying, like, calling him Jalen Waddle. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, huh? Like,
that's a little bit of a stretch, but I mean, he's a special player, though. I'll give him that. But I mean,
please, fans, do not think I'm not saying anything against him at all. Like, I think he's a great player. I think he is going to do wonders. But I think it's a stretch to say that he had a better season, even in Ryan's. And one thing that I can say that Ryan dropped way too many passes. But other than that, like yards up and catch, passing yards, touchdowns, like even in the down year, Ryan still surpassing that. And playing in a position that he never played in. Because I would talk to a receiver in the league about the difference. Because I was like, of course he got brought up. And I was like, yo, like what's going on? Like, why do you think what's the issue? Like, you think it's his mental? And I know, because I brought up, I was like, everybody been saying, like, he got to get the jug receiving more. I was like, but the kid is working. So I know it's not that. So what is it? And we talked about him playing in the spot this season and the aspect of it, like the mental part of it. It's just a lot going on, man. Like, it combined with, you know, never playing slot ever. And then you dropping passes. And then the world talking about you, right? And then you got, I saw a meme, you know, the college football game. They took him off of it and they only had Jeremiah.
Now, people are doing too much. That's why I said, like, listen. The people are doing too much. That's too much.
I also want to talk to you about Hubbard, bro. Like, what's up with Hubbard? It seems like to me he got a lot of talent, bro. But sometimes when you watch film, bro, he be missing sometimes, man. He come up missing a lot.
Yeah, there's some moments in there, which, I mean, it's typical. But that's what my dad was mentioning that one time when we were talking about him. And some people are like, what are you talking about? But it's like, again, if you look at the numbers, it's one thing. But you got to watch the whole picture. Yeah, but he's still a really good player. But yeah, but there's some moments here and there. Yeah, but yeah. You're not wrong. Call in tomorrow, please, because I know you didn't have much time. But I definitely want to continue this.
All right.
To be fair, real quick, to your point, Brooks, 32 receptions, 441 yards, two touchdowns this season, compared to Ryan Williams, 43 receptions, 636 yards, and four touchdowns this season. So, to be fair, Ryan's numbers are better. But I guess if you want to argue the whole critical moment factor, I mean, Brooks has stepped up big in some big moments. So, but great
Ryan had quality touchdowns too as well. The LSU game, no one scored a touchdown. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the bad moments are bad, but I think people are overlooking what he's done too as well. So
I agree with that. I think that's very fair. I think, because hell, I'll be honest, I didn't even expect him to have 200 more yards than Brooks. Just thinking back on the season, off the top of my head, but seeing that, I was like, damn, I didn't realize there was such a separation there with the numbers. Yeah, call back tomorrow, so we got plenty of time to really talk about it.
All right, yo.
All right, sounds good, brother. All right, we got to close out on radio, but don't worry, we're not going anywhere on the stream. If you guys want to jump over from the radio, come hang out with us at the Miller's Edge on YouTube. We'll be watching some tape and continuing the conversation. But if not, we will see you guys tomorrow right here, Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC.